Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Discover a New Beginning Blog Talk Radio. Our show, Phenomenally Yours, broadcasts weekly on Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. This show is inspired by and dedicated to all the phenomenal men and women who are making a difference. Whether someone recognizes your worth or not, know that you are awesome. Our guest today is Dr. Gerald Husell, founder of A Legacy of Power. Dr. Husell is a clinical psychologist and life coach who specializes in the psychology of men. He is the founder of A Legacy of Power, a private practice with more than 25 years' experience working with men, women, and families. He has dedicated his life to self-mastery and teaching men the skills to build spiritual power. Dr. Husell is the creator of the STAR program, Success, Training, and Adult Responsibility. STAR is designed to help youth and adult males begin the rite of passage from malehood to manhood. The program teaches men the science of overcoming limiting beliefs and gives them the tools to develop a blueprint for success. As a consultant, Dr. Husell conducts workshops with youth in the Georgia Department of Juvenile Justice and adult males in the Georgia Department of Corrections. His mission is to use the STAR program to empower young men to live a life free of incarceration. Dr. Husell was born and raised in Harlem and in the South Bronx. He earned his doctorate degree in clinical psychology from Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. He is the father of four beautiful children and now resides in the Atlanta, Georgia area. Welcome, Dr. Husell. Thank you so much for joining us. We are so pleased to have you with us this evening. Welcome to our show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on the show, and thank you so much for your invitation. I really appreciate it.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you get into clinical psychology, and specifically as it relates to men, whether it be young men, adult men, the whole psychology, clinical psychology, how did that come about?
Well, you know, as a young person, I recognized that I had somewhat of a gift of connecting with people and understanding how to be empathic. And I was always interested in how the mind works and how to be able to control your emotions and things like that, because I was an athlete when I was younger. I played basketball at a very young age. And so I was always looking for a way to, one, be in better control of myself and understand how my mind works. And two, I was always able to make connections with people who, you know, kind of gave me insight that this was somewhat of a gift of mine. So I think that for young people, when you see that you are good at something, which was understanding how to make these connections with my friends and family, it became just a natural progression as I began to study the science and get deeper into psychology.
So how do you think then that your childhood played a role in who you've become as a professional and as a man? How do you think your childhood, what role do you think your childhood played in that?
Well, great question. You know, when we grew up, particularly during our time, I'm an older man. I mean, we did really experience being a part of a community and part of a village. So I was not only the son of my mother and father, but I was also part of my family, my extended family in the community. There were men who took responsibility for me, who guided me. I had coaches when I was young. Who told me to stay away from certain elements in the South Bronx and in Harlem. And they really looked out for us. And so that was kind of the mindset and model that I grew up with, was that as a man, you not only take responsibility for you and yours, but you also extend that responsibility to other people in your community, particularly youth and younger men. And that was what was done for me. My coaches and other men in the community certainly invested their time and energy in keeping me on the right track. And so that's how I grew up. So it's very natural for me.
Mm-hmm. You made a very valid point that because we're probably very close in terms of the same generation, because you're mm-hmm. right, it was everybody in the community raised the children. So just because your parents didn't necessarily have their eyes on you, if Miss Sadie, who lived down the street, saw you doing something, first of all, she was going to correct you, and then she was going to go home and tell your parents. And that is something that we don't have now. Where do you think the breakdown came about in that whole notion that it takes a village?
Well, certainly the cultural institutions and our community have been under constant and consistent attack for centuries now. So when you take a look at the attack on the African-American church, when you take a look at the attacks on the economic structures within the African-American community, when you take a look at the attack on the housing structures and how they were compromised and made to be inferior, the educational institutions made to be inferior. Over centuries now of years of constant and consistent threats and attack to our cultural continuity and institutions, we see the effect of this. And for me, in during my time, I speak about our community in terms of AC and BC, before crack and after crack. I think that the crack epidemic and the proliferation of automatic weapons and gangs that we saw throughout the 80s and 90s, late 70s, is what just destroyed and broke the camel's back. We began to see things in our community that we had never, ever seen before. And so crack was the nuclear bomb, the Hiroshima, so to speak, that caused significant casualties. And, of course, we see the prison industrial complex begin to become a major factor once again in our community. And so crack was devastating, and I think that was a major factor.
And, you know, I think the whole privatization of our correctional system just furthered that whole breakdown, because it's now a business, and a business thrives on customers. Unfortunately, the customers in this particular instance are those men and women who are incarcerated. And so between the whole proliferation of crack and how it devastated our community, our family structure, and then the whole privatization of the criminal justice system, it just kind of further just kind of exacerbated that whole problem with the breakdown, in that it takes a village, because now at this point, the enemy is within. You know, before we were a collective body, we were a village, and we were fighting anyone that we perceived that was trying to come in to our community as a collective body. And once that happened, the enemy now was our neighbor. The enemy became our son, our daughter, our mother, our father. So I agree with you, just a total breakdown of the whole family structure. So then what do you see then is one of the biggest challenges, or what are some of the challenges that our men face from going to what you say from malehood to manhood? What are some of the challenges that they face, and how are you able to help them deal with those kinds of challenges?
Yeah, great question. I think there's so many, it's so multidimensional in terms of the challenges that they face. You know, certainly when we speak in terms of the psychology of men, you know, I look at the image and the belief system that many of the young men have of themselves, how they self-identify. And all too often what we see are young men who lack any positive self-identity, any belief that they can rise above their circumstances, any belief that they can learn the skills necessary to be successful in life. And, you know, this is something that is deeply entrenched, and it's also generational. And that is one of the significant factors that I see is that, and studies bear this out, and you know this, I'm sure, is that what we are now seeing is like second, third, and even fourth generation of men who are experiencing incarceration. I've had workshops with men whose fathers were incarcerated. I mean, I think the studies show that for a father who was incarcerated, that their child, and some studies show up to 80% chances that they will also be incarcerated themselves. So we're looking at the generational effects of identity development and thinking that the life that is available to them includes either death or incarceration. And sometimes you can hear young people say that. You can hear men say that. I knew I was going to be in jail before I was 25, or I knew I was going to be dead, or I thought I was going to be dead before I was 18 years old. There's nothing here for me. So it's that hopelessness is a major, major factor. And so one of the things that I do is to give them one, being a black man myself who also understands the streets, because I always tell them that if I had a choice between my doctorate degree and street knowledge, I'm going to choose street knowledge all the time. And so being a black man myself who has come up through Harlem and then South Bronx and understands the street element, they're able to identify with me and see someone who has overcome those challenges, someone who has reinvented themselves several times, someone who is able to have credibility. And from that credibility, I'm able to develop a relationship with them and give them some skills and show them some things, how to reinterpret the experience so that they can possibly have a different outcome. You know, one of the things that I instill in the young men that I work with is that you are gifted and you have everything you need to succeed. No one comes into this world deficient in that way. And what we have to do is to recognize the gifts that you have and how you can apply those gifts to be successful. And success doesn't mean that you are a baller, that you you know, have a bunch of material possessions. But success means that you are healthy, happy, that you're spiritually whole, and that you are able to end the legacy of destruction that is a part of your family. And that's where our conversation stops.
You know, that whole thought pattern of hopelessness that you spoke of, that's what I see is one of the greatest generational curses that we have within our community. A lot of people talk about generational curses, and they look at it mainly on a physical plane, you know, that the welfare. You know, you have generations of people that are on welfare, and that they see is a generational curse, or domestic violence, that is a general, and it is. I'm not taking anything away from that. Those are indeed very serious generational curses. But I see the hopelessness that you spoke of as more of a detriment in terms of a generational curse to our culture, because mm-hmm. your mm-hmm. mental state, you can imprison yourself and not even be behind bars. You know, I spoke one time and I talked about people being locked in a room with all of the windows open. It's a mental mm-hmm. state, and that will keep you locked in and keep you bound from generation to generation. So mm-hmm. then I mm-hmm. wonder if that's then how the legacy of power, if that's how that came about. Tell us a little bit about that and how that came about.
Wow, you know, in the 90s, in the early 90s, I was working with a young man who was incarcerated, and this young man would spend most of his day writing, and he had tablets. He would write raps. He would write stories. He would just write in tablets all day. And he was a real serious problem in terms of being dangerous for a lot of people in the facility when he, you know, would get angry. And so as a psychologist at that facility, I went into a cell one time and I saw he had a book that was written by Alexander Dumas, who wrote the Three Musketeers and a couple of other great classic pieces, and he and had the same name as the writer of the books. And so I started working with him to incorporate Alexander Dumas into his ancestral legacy, and did sessions with him to help him recognize that he was manifesting the same gift as this prolific writer, Alexander Dumas, and that this could be indeed his great-great-grandfather. And we did sessions around that being his family member, and it began to change his perspective about himself and his family. And I saw significant behavioral changes as a result of that. And so I had done my dissertation in the impact of father absence on African-American adolescent males. And so in my practice, I started working with single mothers and encouraging them to, no matter what last name you have, you can find some historical figure with that same last name. And I started encouraging them to begin to weave a mythology and a story around this historical figure as a family member for their children. And began to see some results and some things happen as a result of that. And so the whole concept of legacy came to mind, and the Creator just downloaded the vision of legacy of power to me. And I've been functioning from that mindset for the past 20-something years.
How awesome is that? Because you're absolutely right. We all come from somewhere and from somebody, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. if we go back far enough and check, oftentimes we are surprised at our ancestors and our lineage.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to use that tool to inspire other people to begin to take pride in themselves, I think it's just awesome, because once we have pride in ourselves, then that whole notion of hopelessness diminishes, because pride mm-hmm. then takes of hope, hopelessness, and then you have hope for a better future. Then the women that I work with, I too try and get them to understand we all have a past. We've all mm-hmm. done stuff. You know, I work with women that are incarcerated, and I tell these women, the only difference between me and you is I didn't get caught. It ain't like I didn't do something. in my youth that would have and could have landed me there. So we've all done stuff. The difference is that those of us who were fortunate enough that the Lord protected us against our own foolish selves did not end up with that sense of hopelessness. So I applaud you for that. You know, and that kind of leads me to my next question. So then in your journeys and in all of your experiences in life, can you share with us what are some of the life lessons that you've learned, and how have you been able to apply those lessons not only to yourselves but also to the lives of those that you are impacting?
Yeah. One of the things that I've learned, man, this journey has been incredible. So something that I pass on to men is that to be a constant, consistent, never-ending learner, that, we have to become enthusiastic, energized, and relentless in learning how to improve and better ourselves. When we take a look at the divine engineering, we see such a marvelous and incredible mind-boggling manifestation of who we are in the physical form. And so somehow, some way, and I believe that I got it from my grandfather and my father as well, who were constant readers and leaders, that, I had a thirst for knowledge was one. And just, I wasn't a good student now in school at all. Trust me, I wasn't a good student. I was a failing student in school, in grade school and junior high school and stuff like that. I was a kid that would play around all year long and then pass the test, I always enjoyed studying how the human mind worked and how I could better myself physically. I was into physical fitness and things like that. So I tell young men, listen, YouTube, the internet is a major equalizer. The degree that I got and had to pay thousands of dollars for and people paying for, you can now get that information over the internet constantly and consistently. Seek information on how to better yourself. That's one thing I pass on. The other is I consciously seek to shape my environment to reinforce who I am. So I tell men all of the time, listen, keep notes of paper in your pocket, words of encouragement. You could pick up a rock off the ground and give that rock significant meaning to yourself. And whenever you're feeling hopeless or have doubt in yourself, you can touch that rock and draw energy from that rock just by pulling it out of your pocket. So one of the things that I learned was to, in some way, shape, form, or fashion, control my environment by having statements that I might have on a piece of paper, a statement that I have on my hand, something written on my mirror, pictures on my wall, so that when I come into my environment and when men come into their environment, it reinforces a positive image. Like I'm sitting in my place right now and I can see a picture that says, never grow, never give up, and it has a rose growing out of the snow and never give up. I see that picture every day, and it affirms that I will never give up. So one of the things, control your environment. Introduce things into your environment that give you positive energy, positive affirmation, and affirm who you are as a man and as a human being. So that's another thing that that I pass on to them. The other thing that I pass on is to be scientific in their approach. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. We know that things are manifested by going through the process of metaphysical into the physical world. And so what I teach young men is to be very scientific in their approach by writing down their vision and what it is that they want to manifest in life. That can be goals. It can be just, it doesn't have to be sophisticated, but it could just be what your dreams are. Put them on paper. Keep that paper in your pocket and read it from time to time. This is the science of self-actualization. So those are some of the things that I pass on. The other, which is very, very important, there's two other things that are very important, is that you must take care of your body. You know, the body is the temple of the soul. It's the instrument. And this is a significant factor in our community. And I tell young men, one of the reasons why people don't make it is because they don't have the stamina to make it. Oftentimes, we fail because we don't have the energy. We don't have the stamina. And I tell them that you will know when you're tapping out, when you're trying to overcome a difficult obstacle, because you will get tired and feel sleepy. Someone will put a math problem or a reading problem in front of you, and instead of having the mental stamina and the physical stamina to tackle it, you become tired. So taking care of our bodies consistently, so that we don't age prematurely, that we're not victimized by diabetes, high blood pressure, and the pharmaceutical industry, is something that I teach consistently, taking care of their bodies and watching what types of food that they eat. You know, one of the things that I'm very clear about, and I'm even clearer now working with young men, is that this problem that we see with incarceration literally starts in the womb. And that can be a very controversial statement, but what I mean by that is when an infant, when a baby that's in the womb, its immune system, its neurological system, its digestive system is compromised by the toxic foods that our community is proliferated with, they come out into this world not as strong and as powerful as they could be. Being a baby and not having the mother's breast milk, we know that that compromises an infant's immune system, and it's not the best thing that they should have. And so now we see children who come into preschool, kindergarten, their system has been overwhelmed by refined sugars, other foods that are toxic to their body and immune system, and then they're asked to begin the educational process when they have not been given the proper nutrients and fuel to really manifest their gifts as they were born to do. And so I see that. And it's not by chance. It's certainly by design. That's why we have the food deserts in our communities, because they know what type of problems that this creates in our children.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. I was having this conversation with someone the other day, and we were discussing there are so many children today that have illnesses that we didn't have. Both of my grandchildren have respiratory problems. Now my granddaughter has outgrown hers, and she'll be 9 in a couple of weeks. My grandson is 2, and he has the same respiratory problems. I have friends who their grandchildren have to walk around with that EpiPen because they have such strong allergic reactions. And you're right. We concluded that it's got to be directly related to the food substances that that mother is taking while she's carrying that baby. And I agree with you. It is definitely by design. Our society has gotten to a point now where obesity is a norm. You don't even look twice. When I was a kid, if somebody was fat, and fat then was nothing like what it is now, that child was teased, they were picked on, they were embarrassed, and now it's no big thing. I see families, I see the mother who's overweight, the father's overweight, and they have overweight children walking behind them. They're all eating ice cream, or they're eating pizza, or they're eating chocolate, or it's just horrible. And I agree with you when you talk about shaping your environment. All of that has to do with shaping your environment, you know, your mental state. What is it that you are feeding your children's minds? And what is it that these young people, what are they being exposed to? And that's a great idea that you had, telling these young people to just write down their goals. I do a vision board party for the ladies, and mm-hmm. I went to a vision board party about 5 or 7 years ago. And are you aware of what a vision board party is?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, we did one, and I created a vision board, and when I look at that vision board now, I am able to check off 90% of the things that I saw that I wanted to have accomplished 5, 7 years ago. I've been able to accomplish it. And so I agree. We've got to learn to shape our environment. But you talk about the science of limiting beliefs. How do we overcome those limiting beliefs? Because if we have limiting beliefs, we're going to shape our environment around those limiting beliefs. So how do we get past those limiting beliefs to expand our horizons?
Yeah, I just did a workshop this week with some youth, and one of the things that I focused on was introducing them to new information. And the information I introduced them to was some of the vast opportunities that are out here to make money legally without going into the drug game. And I showed them examples of other young people that was doing it. So, for example, I showed them a video of the gangster gardener out there in California who was a gang member and matured and went through the rite of passage from malehood to manhood, and now he's doing gardens around Los Angeles and transforming his community. Show them how young people have made money in other different avenues that are legal and come from disadvantaged backgrounds as well. So one is to expand their options, to show them examples of people who have done it. And I also let them know that I'm a living example of someone who has done it. I've done some of these things to earn income as well. The other is that I do vision statements with them consistently and have them present that vision to me in terms of a formal presentation where it's critiqued, and they're given feedback by the group on how to improve it. So, you know, how we overcome this limiting belief is by reverse engineering the science that created the limiting belief. You see, the limiting beliefs is an engineered technology of the system. And so what we have to look at is how do we reverse engineer that? And we do it the exact same way that it was instilled in them, is we introduce them to new images, new options, and we try to do it competitively. And then we reinforce that repetition by positive statements, positive reinforcement, by actually allowing them to see how they're able to make small but consistent change in their life. You know, the physical component, to educate them on making healthier choices in terms of food, in terms of working out consistently. Sometimes when I do my workshops, I'll just get on the floor and do 50 push-ups with them, you know, and talk to them about feeling the muscles and the strength that they're feeling in muscles from doing the push-ups. But I'm making a connection, a mind-body connection that deals with improvement and self-improvement, not only with the information but also feeling the physicality of their body and the strength that they can build in their body as well. So, you know, those are some ways that I look at it. By re-engineering the very same process that created the limiting beliefs.
So you inspire so many people throughout your walk, throughout your journey called life. So who are some of the people that have inspired you throughout your career, and what exactly have they done that has inspired you to become the man that you have become today?
Yeah, it's been so many people. You know, when you ask that question, you know my grandfather comes to mind, and my father comes to mind. And so, you know, my father, who died at a young age, he died in his 50s, which is really young. But one of the things I learned from him was that he didn't even graduate from high school, but he had so much charisma and was such a self-educated, intelligent man. I remember being a kid and being in awe of him and how other men responded to him. So I really got a sense of strength from him. From my grandfather was probably a herbalist. I didn't know it at that time, but he was very much into health, and he lived to be like 95 years old, and always talked to me about, him and my grandmother talked to me about being proud of who I am, coming from African royalty. That's what they told me, and I had that story all of my life growing up as a child, to always hold your head up high, come from African royalty. So I heard stories like that growing up. I had coaches over the years. I get a great deal of inspiration from the books that I read. I've read, you know, Reginald Lewis, Why Should White Men Have All the Fun? It was a very inspirational book for me. I mean, Reginald Lewis was probably one of the first black billionaires in modern-day time, and started Beatrice Foods. He died of cancer. Phenomenal book about his journey and how he came up through an impoverished background to become a billionaire. He ultimately died of cancer. So reading books, tremendous inspiration. My mother was a very powerful inspiration for me in terms of being, you know, a compassionate, caring person, and just looking to be a good person. I've really, you know, have spent a lot of time in solitude and meditation, developing a one-to-one connection with the divine source of power that inspires me, because I can see the beauty of the masculine and feminine energy all throughout nature. And so I'm inspired in that way. But I'm inspired also by the men that I meet and the people that I work with. Who have, you know, dealt with some very challenging circumstances in their lives. You know, for a child to experience molestation at the age of 5 or 6 years old and you're still here, you haven't given up. You know, even though you don't know how to get out of the darkness and the prison that you're in, something inside of you tells you that you're a person of value, and the fact that you even open up to talk to me lets me know that you still have some glimmer of life and hope inside of you. And those type of experiences give me a great deal of inspiration. So
what do you want at the end of the day? What do you want people to remember most about you?
And I'm just a good-hearted person that, you know, tried to make a contribution and was not perfect by any means, but trying to make a contribution and you know, be happy. You know, the lady in my life gave me a mug that says, when I was young, I wanted to change the world. But now that I'm older and wiser, I've decided to change myself.
That's right.
And so, you know, I just seek to master who I am. And if I can be the very best person that I can possibly be, I know that I'll touch and inspire some of the lives to do the same.
That's right. I saw a quote one time, and it said, when we were in our 20s, we were concerned, we worried about what other people thought of us. And then when we got in our 30s and 40s, we didn't really care what other people thought about us. And by the time you reach your 50s, you realize there wasn't nobody even thinking about you in the first place. So.
Yeah, I know, right? Isn't that the truth? Everybody thinking about themselves.
That's exactly right. You know, and so that's kind of like what you have to do in order to grow and mature and come into yourself. Because it's like I said, we all have baggage. Everybody has baggage that they bring to the table. Everybody.
Yeah.
And you know, I did a speech one time, and I talked about that baggage. And you know, I said we go on a trip and we come back and we get to the airport, and the first thing we do is we go to baggage claim to pick up baggage. Mm-hmm. And woe unto it if for whatever reason that baggage isn't on the carousel, because we will actually have a fit about clothes that are probably dirty, that can be replaced, and really in the whole scheme of things don't have a whole lot of significance to where we are and where we're going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just our baggage that we hold on to. So, you know, you're absolutely right. You kind of have to come into yourself and understand who you are and whose you are for you to be able to live a life that we were created. And I'm like you. We were all created for a purpose, and I feel strongly that we were created to live and to love the life that we live. So, overcoming all of these things that you're doing will help these young men to just kind of manifest that life and to live a life of hope and have dreams. So what's next for you? What is your vision of where you're going from here?
Well, you know, certainly to continue doing what it is that I'm doing. At this stage, you know, the vision that I have is to see more of the world and to have greater control of my time, have people in my life who love me and that I love as well. My vision is simplicity and peace and creativity. It's not complex anymore at this stage in life. You know, I'm much more focused on being a human being rather than a human doing. You know, my children are very important to me and my family, and having more time to spend with them, quality time. You know, because we understand that this is really our true wealth.
This is
what enriches our lives. I've had a lot of material possessions in years, houses and cars and all that kind of stuff. And now, you know, my time is my most precious commodity, and how I choose to spend my time, you know, with family, loved ones, and in solitude, continuing to grow. That is where I'm headed.
After you have poured into so many others, how do you relax and refill your spirit? Because we all know you cannot pour from an empty vessel. So how do you relax to refill your spirit after pouring into so many others?
You know, I consistently go to the gym. I work to stay fit and in shape. One of the things that I tell men and teach men is that, you know, you should be beautiful. You know what I'm saying? Your skin should be beautiful. Your body should be beautiful. Your mind should be beautiful. Your thoughts should be beautiful. And so I invest in taking care of myself. And one of the ways that I do that is working out consistently. I've always worked out all of my life. I've never been out of shape. So I take care of my body. The other thing is that I spend time, you know, with my children playing, having fun, making sure that I laugh. Spend time with the lady in my life. We talk a lot. She helps me to grow and expand as a man, as a human being. We read and study together. And then nature. I tell people in my workshops, one of the top three things that I can tell you to transform your life is to spend more time in nature. My definition of sanity is to someone who's in an unnatural setting that thinks is natural, and to be in a natural setting to think that is unnatural. Nature will help to recalibrate your mind, body, and spirit. And the more disconnected we are from the earth, the more mental health problems, spiritual and emotional problems we have. So making sure that I connect with nature and stay connected with nature is one of the things that regenerates me as well. So diet.
That is so true. That is just some solitude, just quiet time, just somewhere where you can look at God's creation and see it and feel it. That has to renew your spirit. As we wind down here, can you share some words of inspiration to someone in our audience who just might be just trying to find themselves, just trying to discover who they are, trying to break out of the mental prison that they have created or has been created around them? Can you give just some words of inspiration to someone in our audience?
Yes, absolutely. This is something that can absolutely be done by you. If you look at our history, there is a history of resiliency, a history of power, a legacy of power that you come from. And all of those characteristics, strengths, gifts, and divine power is in you. You are a part of an unbroken chain of success. What's the evidence of that? Your existence in this current space and time. If at any point in time, that chain in your family history, in your legacy, was broken, you would not be here. So that tells me, and it tells you, that the fact that you are here, you come from a legacy of success. So slow things down. Begin to allow yourself to get in touch with that inner voice of truth that is inside of all of us. Turn the television off. Drink more water to help detox your body. Detox yourself from people who drain you of energy. Turn the television off. The television is a major energy drainer. Look for books to read. Look for magazines, stories to read to give you inspiration and spend more time in nature. And never, ever, ever give up.
Don't give up. Don't give up. We want to thank you. Our time is up right now, Dr. Hassell, but can you tell our listening audience how they might contact you if someone wanted to reach out? How might they get in touch with you?
Well, you can certainly reach me at drgeraldhassell@gmail.com. That's my email address. And also, you can reach me on Facebook, A Legacy of Power /Facebook as well. A Legacy of Power /Facebook.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us this week. A very special thank you to Dr. Hassell for joining us. You be sure to join us every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time to hear from another phenomenal person. Or you can listen to our broadcast on blogtalkradio.com/discover a new beginning. If you would like to be a guest on the show or you know someone who is phenomenal, please contact me at linda@lindahwilliams.com. So I leave you with these words from that phenomenal woman, Maya Angelou. Says, that man is a success who leaves the world better than he found it, who has never lacked appreciation of Earth's beauty or failed to express it, who looked for the best in others and gave the best that he had. That is a phenomenal man. Thank you very much, and we'll see you here again next week. You all have a good week. Goodbye.
Thank you.